Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, great story in Virginia today. Well, evidently, the folks with the Northern Virginia Labor Federation, the local arm of the AFL-CIO, decided they were going to take some cake. Who doesn't love cake? This, I guess, is the third cake that they've taken to Senator Mark Warner to get him to sign on to the PRO Act. I guess they've tried chocolate. I guess they've tried vanilla. I guess next might be an ice cream cake. They're throwing that idea around. Anything to get him to sign on and become a co-sponsor of the PRO Act. And as I said earlier today, this is one of those moments. So Democrats, if you're listening, this is one of those issues where there isn't a pass. This is, if you're a Democrat, you sign on to the PRO Act to protect workers' rights to organize and to protect themselves on the job and fight for better wages, hours, and conditions. There is no pass here. There is no, maybe next time, because I don't think there is a next time. It's just that simple. So take the cake, Mark Warner. Enjoy the cake and sign on. Anyway, some good news. I guess not good news. A new report out by the AFL-CIO. Actually, some really bad news. They looked at the 2019 death rates at work and the number of people who lost their lives at work. They do this every year. It's their death on the job report. And here to share some thoughts on what they found, I've asked MK Fletcher to come talk with us. She's a safety and health specialist there at the AFL-CIO. MK, thanks for taking time for us.
Hi, thank you so much for having me. I really get to appreciate sharing these unfortunate findings.
So cake, pro cake?
I don't think that we should send cake for what happened in 2020.
No, but Mark Warner better sign on. And the cake was just a sweetener. It's not a bribe, so stop that. Anyway, let's get to the report. I guess not 2019, before the pandemic. I don't want to see what 2020 is going to look like, but before the pandemic, I guess the report found that 5,333 people lost their lives on the job. That means they woke up, they got dressed, they drove to the job, they were at work, and they didn't come home. That seems like a higher number than the year before. Am I right?
Yes, you're right. It is a higher number than the year before. And 2019 is the most recent data that we have. So it really shows where the state of things in the nation was before the pandemic happened, which we know has been the worst occupational safety and health crisis of our lifetimes.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to see 2020, to be honest with you. But I think when it comes, it's going to highlight what we've been talking about for the last year and a half, and that protections on the job are way too weak. And the former guy did a lot of things to break the system even worse than it was already broken.
Yeah, definitely. You know, this is the 30th year of our report. We really started this report 30 years ago because nobody was tracking what was going on, of what was killing people on the job, how people were getting injured. We weren't tracking the resources and what the agencies were doing around job safety to prevent all these terrible deaths from happening. And we weren't identifying the progress that we made and then the progress that needs to be made. So now we have 30 years worth of all of this information, and we've really gotten to see, you know, the progress that has been made in those 30 years, because, you know, not as many workers are dying on the job, but the number that you said, the 5,333 workers who died in 2019, that number hasn't changed that much. It increased in 2019, but it's always hovered around 5,000 workers for a good number of years. And we really need to see more progress being made and not get complacent, allowing many workers to die.
I have listeners who say, well, you know, it's only 5,333 people. It's not like it used to be back, you know, 100 years ago, where you had 100,000 people dying on the job. And you go, well, safety regulations, unions had a big part in stopping the number of people dying, because we did fight for better conditions. But we also don't do the kind of jobs that we used to do back then in the same manner. I mean, we don't have 100,000 people working at one steel mill in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania anymore. So, you know, these are jobs that are around. Have we looked at who What kind of jobs are the most dangerous? You know, who's going to work and not coming home? And maybe any ideas on how we stop those numbers from increasing?
Yeah, definitely. You know, every single year we look at the industries and occupations of people who are dying at work. It's usually occupations that you would think, agriculture, fishing, working, but we also look at the different demographics of workers. This year, one thing we really saw was a sharp increase in the Latino worker fatality rate. It really jumped this year. It was a 14% increase.
Wow.
And then also the number of Black workers who died on the job also took a sharp increase this year. It's the highest number in more than two decades, actually, of the number of Black workers who died on the job.
That's incredible. Now, from what I read in the report, something like 66% of the Latino workers were immigrants. You know, how many of them were documented? How many were undocumented? And do we can we be certain that that's an accurate number, given the fact that there are a number of undocumented workers here, that you know, because we don't know how many or where, that, you know, those things get brushed under the rug. Do you think that's an accurate number?
You know, when you're talking about fatality numbers, there is unfortunately a body to be counted. So I feel like that's probably some closer to accurate. But when you're talking about workplace injuries, right, which can be very severe and very monumental in someone's life and really change the course of their life, we don't know the true toll of those, and we don't know what's happening. It's underreported, period, for all workers, and much less when you have additional things that would make a employer not report those injuries, make a worker not want to share those injuries either.
Right. Now, you know, I look at this, and the reason I ask that is because the shocking thing in your report is you're saying every day, on average, 275 workers in this country die because of hazardous conditions. Now, 5,333 is the number of people who go to work today and don't come home today. You're saying, this report saying that, you know, 95,000 people die every year because of occupational diseases, exposure to asbestos, exposure, you know, black lung disease, you know, chemical exposures, things like that. What else are we talking about when you're throwing occupational diseases in there?
That is exactly what we're talking about. We're talking about a lot of chemicals that, over time, being exposed to them, you end up with the really terrible diseases, the cancers, the chronic lung disorders, that really have such a long lasting impact on your quality of life at your, you know, the later years when you're supposed to be able to enjoy them. You know, the Occupational Safety and Health Administration, one thing when the agency first started that it did such a great job at is it put out standards for things like lead and asbestos and some of these very toxic chemicals. It doesn't mean they're still not an issue in the workplace. They definitely are. But that really made a big impact there. And then now you see there hasn't been as many of those standards for chemicals to come out. The last big standards, health standards that came out under OSHA were under Obama. He just did two of them, silica and beryllium. And I think they're making a huge impact, particularly in the construction industry with silica. But we need more of that. And it took way too long. OSHA had to work on those standards for a really, really long time to get them out the door. So we need to have more of that.
No, it's interesting you bring those up because, you know, it was reported early in the former guy's administration that those were things that he was trying to scale back. Were they successful in scaling some of that, the beryllium and the silica and some of those standards? I thought they scaled some of that back because that was going to be my next question. You know, how much of this could have been prevented? Because we had an administration, the last one, who was hell-bent on deregulating everything because, you know, MK, those job-killing regulations, you know, never mind the people-killing lack of regulation. But, you know, am I wrong in this?
No, you are correct. The last administration did. They were very against regulations and really tried to do that. The union movement really fought against that administration doing anything against taking away worker protections, especially the safety and health protections they'd fought for so long. And unfortunately, the silica standard still stands in place as is and still there to be enforced strongly. The beryllium standard, there were some changes to it. They really tried to completely roll back a lot of it for construction and shipyard workers. Unfortunately, a few things were changed, but the majority of the standard still holds.
Good. Now, the other part of this is, it's great to have standards. It's great to have regulations. If you don't have inspectors, and I as understand, under the last guy's watch, we are at what could be, well, the lowest point of OSHA inspectors in the history, in the 50-year history of OSHA. I guess at one point we were somewhere like 1,200 inspectors during the Reagan era. It was down to 774 during the last guy's term.
Exactly. We are at near the lowest. Last year in 2019 was the lowest number of inspectors for the entire history of the agency. And for 2020, they did hire a few more people, but it was a very small number of people. And I think it was also because of a lot of pressure that they were getting.
Yeah, you got a
Say,
global pandemic going on.
there's a global pandemic, and you don't have people to enforce the rules, any type of rules. So it's so key. We really need that investment in the agency so that it can do its job.
Now, one of the things that's of interest to me is today Marty Walsh, the Secretary of the Department of Labor, who I'm thrilled with, came out and said they're going to make it harder to for employers to declare people independent contractors. How much of when you did this report, were you looking at people who are self-employed, these independent contractors, these gig workers? Do they get added into this, or do we have? Is there no one tracking what happens to gig workers on the job? Because I gotta imagine the Uber and Lyft drivers and some of the package delivery guys who are on their own. I gotta imagine that bad things happen to them. But they're self-employed. They're not employees. They're not workers. Any thought?
Yeah, definitely. The rule made it easier. The rule that was rescinded made it easier for employers to misclassify them as independent contractors. And this is so important in the sp safety space of whether you're considered an employee or an independent contractor, because OSHA can only cover people who are employees. So if you're an independent contractor, you don't have OSHA coverage. So when your employer misclassifies you, they're basically passing the buck, saying they don't want to be in charge of their safety. They don't want to offer you the worker protections that you deserve. And we do track and have been tracking at least the number of self-employed workers and the rate of the fatality rate for self-employed workers. And it is significantly higher than those who are considered wage and salary workers. This most recent data for 2019, self-employed workers were more than four times more likely to die on the job than somebody who was considered wage and hour.
Wow. No, I mean, I was expecting to, well, we don't really know, but you're actually tracking this.
Yes, the Bureau of Labor Statistics does offer that information. They don't have much detailed information on it for 2019, but at least we do know the top line that it is a significant problem.
Because, I'm of this mindset, and I know a lot of people who they've been bamboozled into believing they're their own boss. And I come out of the trucking industry. So for years, this is for decades now, thanks to Ronald Reagan, you've got everybody, any Tom, Dick, or Harry who owns a truck is now a trucking company. They're their own boss, yet they're told where to go, what time to be there, what to pick up, how to get there. They're told what half the time what uniforms to wear, what can be written on the truck, what can be written on the truck, but they're their own boss. They don't have a boss. All what they do is they have all the responsibility, all the risk, and they're the ones who are, you know, getting the short end of this stick, but they're their own boss. And, you know, I look at this and I'm going, you know, most of the people I know who are in this position don't want to be. They just need a job. They need to make income. And you have an entire industry outside of the unionized industry that's pushing this. So for me, seeing this administration pushing back on this misclassification is really important.
I completely agree with you. It's recognizing that this is a problem, that having these fissured employment relationships are not good for society. And it's also not good for the safety and well-being of workers. And we cannot let employers skirt their responsibilities to keep the workplace safe.
I'm right there with you. Now, what are you hoping comes out of this report? I know you guys have been doing this for 30 years. And I hope folks will take a look at it at AFL-CIO.org. We'll get links out on how you can take a look at the report and see the numbers, these horrible numbers. What are you hoping comes out of this?
Now, it's a lot of things. It's a very long, comprehensive report. But one thing, you know, is OSHA and MSHA, they were created in the 70s. And this pandemic has really highlighted that they are so critical and important. And these agencies really need to be bolstered with the resources they need to hold employers accountable when they're not doing their jobs and keeping workplaces safe. And also, you know, we know people need strong, comprehensive protections from COVID-19 right now. That still needs to be done. It's not over. Working age people have taken the brunt of it, and we're tired of that. With workplaces reopening, those who've been at work and those who are being asked to go back really need those protections in place.
Yeah, at the end of the day, MK, for me, it's you know, union job equals safer life. You got a better chance of going home. And I think your report does lay that out. Non-union workplaces are less safe than union workplaces. And as you've pointed out, the gig jobs, much less safe.
Definitely. And we need that accountability there, and we need the government to hold those employers accountable.
Right there. And it comes back down to policy. We need the PRO Act. We need to end this gig nonsense, and we need to go back to the bargaining table. But, MK, I appreciate you taking some time. Thanks so much for sharing the report with us.
Thank you so much.
MK Fletcher, safety and health specialist there at the AFL-CIO. Make sure you check out the report, the Death on the Job report. We'll get links out on social media how you can do that. Quick break. Right back. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
Remembering that united we bargain, divided we beg. Rick Smith.